You are listening to The News Project, in studio. Brought to you by GNAT TV.
Hello and welcome back to another edition of GNAT TV's In-Depth Series. I'm Andrew McKeever, the news director at GNAT TV's News Project. It's a pleasure to have you with us today on Tuesday, May 30th. It's also a great pleasure to be joined in the studio by Representative Seth Bongartz and also online by Commissioner Josh Hanford. He is the Commissioner of the Department of Housing and Community Development with the Agency of Commerce and Community Development, and also Ann Wallace Allen, who is a writer for 7 Days, a newspaper based up in Burlington, who follows the housing and business beats very closely. And housing is our topic of today. It's been discussed quite a bit over the last few years, and probably we'll be talking about it again for a while longer. But here to help us understand the issue better and dissect where we're at the moment, really pleased to have our three guests here with us. And Representative Bongartz, I thought we could start with you and have you remind us a little bit about what's in the bill that I know you had a large role in shaping and developing. S-100 is a housing bill. It's been passed by the legislature, although the governor has not yet signed it. But tell us what that bill would do if it is enacted and goes into effect.
Well, maybe it's worth stepping back just a little bit first. And last summer and fall, along with actually a couple of people from the commissioner's staff, Maura Collins from Vermont Housing Finance, Gus Selig from VHCB, Kathy Beyer from Housing Vermont, other a couple of town planners, and three EDs of regional commissions. Looking at the housing issue, sort of thought about, okay, what part of it can we tackle, or what can we do, and what can we do well to get legislation ready? And so we worked through, I think it was 17 drafts by the time we were done over the course of that time. And it was really a great group effort. So I was the legislator involved, but really what I did, along with the commissioners, a couple of people in the commissioner's staff, was pull people together and really thought about what we could do and what we could do well. And it really worked out well because we ended up with a bill that by the time it was introduced was fully baked. A lot of times what happens is there's concepts and they're put together as best an individual can, but by pulling all these people together and really thinking about it line by line and word by word, and a lot of it emerged intact after the whole legislative process. All we could do, of course, is get it ready for the legislative process. But what we did was focus on largely on zoning, municipal planning and zoning, because that's where I think if there is that was a pinch point. That's a pinch point in the process. It gets to the NIMBYism issue that I know you want to talk to before we're done here. A few of the specifics of the bill. The bill is in one way you can think about it. Let me back up one more step. And Maura Collins from the Vermont Housing Finance Agency had produced an estimate, and she went through it with us in our committee where the bill actually came, my committee on environment and energy, and estimates that Vermont needs somewhere between 30 and 40,000 units of housing within the next 8 years just to deal with current demand and produce a tiny bit of vacancy rate, which is such a thing as a healthy vacancy rate. Now, whether those numbers are not scientific, she did the best she could, but the real point is it's an order of magnitude that's pretty significant. So we also started with the premise that if we're going to build 30 to 40,000 units of housing in Vermont in the next 8 to 10 years, the only place, or the place that it really makes sense to build them, is in downtowns. Otherwise, it's just sprawl and forest lands and farmlands. And so we really focused on zoning, and we really focused on how to get housing built in downtowns. And within downtowns, you have those towns with sewer and water, and you have those towns without sewer and water, municipal sewer and water. And so getting to your question now, that in areas with sewer and water, let me talk about a couple of those things first, and then we can go to the areas, parts that adhere anywhere. In areas with sewer and water, this bill says that towns must allow at least 5 units an acre. What we have now in some communities, by the way, communities are moving in this direction. But some zoning ordinances have not been updated and haven't moved past where they were in the 70s and even into the 80s. And you still have large lot requirements, large setbacks, in right in the middle of downtown where we've put all this money into sewer and water infrastructure and it's serving one house on an acre. I mean, so we said that towns must allow at least 5 units an acre. We said that towns may not require more than one parking space per unit within these areas. Again, on the theory that we're trying to get walkability, access to services, and we can't keep building everything that we do around the car. And so what we said, and because it's very expensive, by the way, every time the developers require to add more parking than we actually need, it's wasted expense and it's harder to get affordable housing built. Affordable or middle income housing built in downtowns. And then we said, so that's one and two. And then the third thing that adheres in areas with sewer and water is that if there's an affordable housing component, towns must allow within these areas a 40% density bonus. And that bonus can be taken with an extra floor if that's the way that the developer chooses to do it. And so in some areas, if the maximum height is 3 stories, if you're doing affordable housing, you can go one more story because it's that much more efficient. We can get more housing built. So then in the areas that sort of adhere across Vermont, one thing that adheres anywhere in Vermont now is that anywhere you can build a single family home, you can, by definition or by right, build a duplex. So that's really an important component of this because it's one driveway, one foundation, one set of services, and you get 2 for 1. It's also a way for people to enter the middle class. It's a traditional way for people to enter the middle class because family lives in one part of it and rents out the other, and that helps pay the mortgage. It's also important to note that a lot of these duplexes may come from, we think of them as being side by side, the traditional duplex, but actually they may come from conversion of existing housing. We had a lot of testimony about people living in housing that is way beyond what they need now, but there's no place to move to. So living in these big houses, and if some of those can get converted to duplexes, and it may be one floor and two, first floor, second floor, or it may be side by side, depending on how it works out. But anywhere in Vermont, you can build a single family home, you can build a duplex. And then there's a provision that one of the things that happens, and this goes to, I know you want to talk about this more, but I'll touch on it now, the sort of NIMBYism question, that happens is that when a developer is proposing a housing development, be it low income or middle income, whatever, you have the neighbors coming to the zoning board and saying, we don't like this, it's going to be too much noise, too much traffic, et cetera. And there's a provision in this bill called the by right provision, not BUI, but BY, by right. And what it says is that if the ordinance says, and so what happens under those circumstances is that if it says you can do 8 units an acre, neighbors come out, they're unhappy, zoning boards tries to find a compromise, and we end up with 4. So we end up half the housing we could have had. And what this provision says is that if the ordinance says you can have 8 units an acre, you get to that cannot be whittled away by the zoning board. And so that'll actually relieve some pressure on the zoning boards because they can say to the neighbors, well, there's nothing we can do about it. Law says so what it really means is that when you write your zoning ordinance, make sure you mean what you say, because that's going to be required. And there's provisions about, like, for instance, going to the housing crisis. I don't want to keep talking here for too long, but going to the housing crisis, these are just things that are in the bill. It prohibits municipalities from prohibiting hotels and motels renting rooms to those utilizing general assistance. It's just tough. They can do it, and there's nothing, communities can't say no. It adds emergency shelters to uses that a municipality must allow. They can be controlled just like you have, schools, daycare centers, churches. I can't think of other things that are on that list within Chapter 117 of things that the community has to allow. It's now added emergency shelters, and the law now says, starting July 1st, that you cannot control hours of operation, or you cannot impose seasonality, because it turns out it's cold during the day too.
Yeah, no, thanks. And I want to thank Representative Baumgartz, especially for taking leadership here and getting a group together, you know, almost a year ago at this time to start talking about this, identifying real solutions. Also want to thank Chair Rahm Hinsdale and the Senate side who really added on to Representative Baumgartz's bill and included some of the Act 250 reforms as well, and some of the other housing programs. So this is a very good step in the right direction. And we're not alone. I mean, there are states across the whole country that are doing this. Just this year, Maine, Montana, Rhode Island, Florida. I mean, the list is growing of states taking on this sort of reform, both at the local, you know, zoning, regulatory level, statewide level, and then also recognizing that there needs to be incentives and programs to help support the housing we need built right now, because the costs are out of control. You know, Americans, not just Vermonters, are suffering. But, you know, Vermont's problem is pretty acute. We've been seeing it growing for decades. We've been seeing sort of our vacancy rates decline. You know, people often confuse census data out there because we do have vacancies, but they're second homes, and those vacancies in the second homes sort of match up with the counties that have the most second homes and camps, like Essex County and Grandia County and some of the southern counties. Those aren't homes that are available for someone to purchase or rent. We have virtually no homes to purchase and virtually, as you know, 1% or less vacancy rate for full-time rental. Big step in the right direction, lots of groundwork here, great discussions over the session. I think, you know, myself, the governor, you know, wish we'd have gone a little bit farther on the Act 250 reform. There's some great additions here, moving the what's been referred to as the 10-5-5 rule, meaning you can build up to 10 units within 5 years, within 5 miles before triggering Act 250. That has been moved to 25 units within 5 years, within 5 miles in our designated areas for 3 years. It has a 3-year sunset. That's a great start. I think that challenge there is it's a smaller part of the land area in Vermont that most people think. Most people think all of their downtown or all of their village is covered in these designations, and it's just not. It's only 0.3% of the land area in Vermont. You know, Burlington, for example, only something like 14% of the whole city is included in these designations. So we just think there needs to be a little bit more space to build this housing that still lines up with smart growth areas that are already developed, areas that already have water and sewer. They just can't meet the statutory rules around receiving one of those designations, because they weren't built, those designations weren't primarily designed to support housing development over the last 25 years that they've been developed. They were for certain tax incentives and so forth. But we have a review underway. We're going to look at that. So it's a good start. Think there's the priority housing project exemption, which limits if you build certain types of housing that includes an affordable housing component within these designated areas, it takes off a cap. So you can build any number of them. That change is literally going to support a number of housing developments over the next few years, get off the ground where they were capped at 50 units or 75. And the scale of development that's appropriate for some of these areas, because they have the water, sewer, the sidewalks, is 150, 200 units. And that's the scale of neighborhoods that we need in the right places to be built to address this housing shortage we have. So glad that this is moving forward. You know, there's some other components to this bill that are beyond the zoning and regulatory that deal with programs. There's a few studies in here. There's a study compelling the Agency of Natural Resources to look at the duplication of the water and wastewater permit that exists and sort of come back with a plan to streamline that, which is a good thing. Folks have been asking for that for years. There's a study by the Department of Public Safety to look at the state's building codes, the residential building energy standards and other building codes, to see if there's a way to be more flexible around all sorts of things, whether it be elevators, you know, second egress, just to make sure, not to compromise safety, but just to make sure if there's any alternatives that can allow more housing to be built, more flexibility, especially in some of our existing buildings where we're maybe converting from an old use to housing as a new use, what can be done, as well as reform around shelters in communities. We're seeing a number of communities right now being abutting neighbors or others that are opposing shelters that we need across the state to deal with our folks that are finding themselves in homelessness, even for a temporary period. So that'll be a big win. And then programs like VHIP, Vermont Housing Improvement Program, there's some reform to the program that we've been asking for a couple years included in the bill, which gives some more flexibility around the types of units that can be supported with VHIP and, units that are non-code compliant but are currently housing an affordable tenant to ensure that they're stably housed, but those units could be brought up to code so people are living in safe environments. It also has a large appropriation for VHCB to continue the work they do, and then a contingency appropriation for more missing middle, a revolving loan fund to support that. But as you know, the budget is sort of up in the air right now. It's been vetoed. And so those appropriations, we'll have to wait and see what happens through the negotiations, as well as a whole bunch of smaller programs that were included in the bill contingent upon funding. That dealt with expanding legal aid and a mobile home park program and eviction protection and rental assistance. And there's a number of programs in there that were contingent upon funding, but were not included in the budget appropriations made towards housing that are really up in the air, whether they can go forward or not. But at least there was a space carved out for them. And I will say, last thing, S-100 has not been referred to the governor yet. He's receiving something like 20 or 30 bills a week to consider, and then once they arrive, have 5 days to decide whether to sign them or not. But S-100 has not, as of my last count this morning, been referred to the governor.
Okay, well, a lot there. Ann Wallace Allen, you've written several stories for 7 days on the housing issue. And I guess I just wondered, in the course of your reporting, what has struck you the most about how this housing shortage here in Vermont is affecting folks?
Yeah, I think it's clear that, like many crises, this is affecting people who are the most vulnerable. We see that in the increase in the homeless population, because it's clear that the primary driver of the increase in homelessness is the increase in rents and the increasing unaffordability of housing. And also for people who are housed, a lot of them are badly underhoused because they can't afford a place that will, or find, but if they do find it, they can't afford a place that is big enough for what they need. So I think one of the things that this whole housing crisis has demonstrated is that Vermont is closely tied to the fortunes of the rest of the world. We might think that we're not, because we're different from the rest of the U.S. in some ways, certainly in the way, in terms of our open spaces, our mountains, and our green space. But we are tied to things like housing prices and in the increasing gulf between the low income and the very high income. I mean, that is clearly a dynamic that's at play in Vermont, where many people own two or more houses. Even people who live in Vermont, many of them own another house that they might use as a second home. So there, it's not as though there aren't homes in Vermont, it's just that many of them are not occupied or available. And of course, as Josh pointed out, there is a need for more construction. I mean, that's something that goes back many, many decades. So there is a need for more housing inventory, but there is also housing inventory that's not being used. So these are some of the things that have become more clear over the last few years as the state policymakers have made housing a priority. Another thing is that, a theme in the housing discussion all along has been the pay that Vermonters get for their work. It's not high, it's lower than comparable jobs in the region, and that also makes the housing unaffordability problem worse. I talk to a lot of realtors too in my work, and although the goal The state's development goals are to keep our green spaces green and to keep our hilltops free from housing developments and to focus housing in the village and town centers. Not everybody who can afford to build or buy a house wants to live in a village center. And so that is a sort of a conflict that has arisen in the latest legislation and also just in discussions about housing. A lot of people move to Vermont, or when they can afford to, they build a house specifically with the goal of having that 10 acres, that 10 acre lot in their house. I mean, that's something that has contributed greatly to sprawl in Vermont, but it is also something that people want. So that's sort of a balancing act that lawmakers and other policymakers have to do when they talk about how to regulate housing development in Vermont.
I'd like to ask all three of you to briefly comment on your thoughts about that, the NIMBY factor, as we refer to it, not in my backyard. I mean, I'm probably sure if you talk to 100 people in anywhere in the state, they'd agree, yeah, we have a housing shortage problem. We've got to build more housing. But I don't put it where I have to look at it every day. I don't want that 20-unit housing development in my backyard.
Yeah,
how do we work around that? We'll start with you and then go to Commissioner Hanford and Ann for their thoughts on that.
Well, the buy right provision helps with that. And the other provision that's really key in this bill we haven't talked about yet is that it says that with regard to housing, if the zoning board finds that it fits within the character of the area, and the neighbors or nobody can, no, you cannot appeal on that basis. Because you've already said in your zoning ordinance, this is a place we want housing, and you can't appeal saying, well, we don't want housing. So it's saying there, whether it's a shelter, whether it's low-income housing, whether it's just denser housing, you cannot appeal on character of the area. So those two provisions at least try to make a dent in that.
I think that, you know, fundamentally the NIMBY issue, it also is at odds with sort of private property rights as well, you know? So if I have a piece of property and I want to build a 4 or 5 unit apartment building and my neighbor then is going to appeal it, it's taking away what my rights are to address my issues. And so everyone at some level has self-interest here. So it's, you know, it's got to be dealt with even-handedly. I think that sort of the opportunities we've given the public to weigh in on decisions has to be balanced, and maybe in some respects we've given so many options for everyone to have their voices heard, and the folks that are missing from that are those that don't have the homes yet, that don't have a voice in the discussion, and we're trying to get that balance right here. I think the steps in this bill are good ones. We'll see if we need more tweaking. You know, there's cases going on right now where are having great impact on our ability to serve some vulnerable folks because of appeals, NIMBY issues with abutting neighbors that this bill, the changes we made wouldn't actually stop at this point because they do have rights as abutters, as a single individual. So we'll see. It's right to focus on this because it's a discussion happening everywhere.
You know, Vermont, like every other place, does have a big NIMBY issue. It's also a subtle one that cannot be addressed by legislation, and that is that when a house comes up for sale, in many cases people send an email out to their neighbors because they're looking for before they put it out to a realtor, because they want to give people they know an opportunity to buy that place and not a complete stranger. I mean, I think it's well known through social science that people gravitate toward people who are like them or try to in their living situation. And that is something that policy is seeking to counteract, because it leaves out a lot of people who aren't from the neighborhood or might be different from the people in the neighborhood for one reason or another. It's just a fact of living in Vermont. And it kind of calls into greater focus the whole phenomenon of change and resistance to change, which has been a big theme throughout this housing discussion, because Vermont is characterized by its look. And, you know, many people live here because they love the way that it looks. And there's no question that building 40,000 units of housing, or whatever it turns out to be, is going to change the look of not only of Vermont's downtown areas, but also of some of its open spaces. And so people are a little bit resistant to that, and that's why there has been resistance to the bill that S-100 that resulted in many of its provisions being removed along the way that would have allowed for some relaxing the rules against building housing. People, I think, recognize that there's a need for housing, that it's a human rights issue, and that it's an economic issue. But at the same time, they worry that Vermont is just going to look like its neighbors, where there has been a huge expansion over the years of housing development without, in some cases, a whole lot of planning.
Well, Anne, I promised you an opportunity to ask these two gentlemen a question. I'm going to turn the microphone over to you.
Commissioner Hanford, you guys, I know, are aware that right now it's easier for the larger developers, the larger affordable housing developers, to take advantage of tax credits and other programs to build housing. So as I understand it, you just launched a new program for small village center, rural type developers who are just doing a couple projects. And how is that going to help people, like regular mom and pop type people who maybe want to build one rental or two rentals? How's it going to help them to build?
Yeah, no, great. You know, I think this ties to that fear of change question as well. You know, it's pretty scary if people are thinking about adding 40,000 units of housing to the state. And part of this project, this Homes for All Missing Middle Toolkit, is to show people that you can add housing units into your existing neighborhoods with a very low impact. If you're talking about duplexes and triplexes and quadplexes and accessory dwelling units in the back over the garage, trying to focus on this missing housing type, which used to be pretty pretty common 50, 80 years ago, because it's smaller housing by square foot, by standards, that fits into sort of infill places that fits within the character. It doesn't have to be a huge housing development. We can get quite a lot of units built that way. And what this program is, it's not new money, but it's meant to provide a toolkit, a ready, you know, architectural drawings, you know, a path to permitting, some common examples to get neighbors and select boards and DRBs comfortable with this style of housing. So it's meant to provide that sort of first few steps that say a newer developer or smaller developer, someone that wants to get into this field brand new, can start, can take advantage of the first few steps we've taken care of with some design, some architectural drawings, some plans, some marketing to get people familiar and encourage, hopefully, some more developers that may not think of themselves as big developers to get into this, to help solve this housing problem in a very incremental way that doesn't really scare the whole community or the neighborhood, is the thought behind this effort.
I know that another issue is that it's much easier to build in a rural area a rural village center if you have water and sewer. And there's been a lot of talk about infrastructure, but we in the media haven't delved into exactly what that's going to mean for those villages. Is there going to be more water and sewer so that smaller developers can build in these villages?
Yes, I believe so. Agency of Natural Resources has been have rolling grant announcements for village water and wastewater grants from the ARPA funds. Those are rolling out. A number of projects that I've been familiar with for 10 or more years that have been struggling with this issue are finally getting the funding that they've needed to install these. You know, take Montgomery, for example. That's one that's been around for 10 years planning for, and is finally getting the resources to pull that off, as well as allowing alternative systems, you know, in-ground wastewater solutions that are village scale, which may need to use some conserved land outside of the village in order to provide the wastewater capacity, but ultimately will benefit the housing density and development in the village. So I'm hopeful that we'll see more of these and allow for more of this density, because right now, talking about this big change coming, all those designated areas, I think only about 12% of the state's population lives in those areas. So if we're going to see the growth we need in housing units, those areas are going to be more dense, and so that we're going to have the infrastructure in place to allow that to happen. And then your point around, well, some people still don't want to live there, so how do we still allow them to be in our more rural landscape? is still going to be an issue that we'll need to deal with.
Okay. Do I have time for one more?
Sure.
All right, Representative Baumgartz, I've got one for you. I know that you guys were starting to meet last summer and you assembled a very large coalition from all sides to work on your housing bill. Are you guys meeting again this summer? Are you going to be talking about housing again this summer?
Well, it's just the way I work, so yes. A little bit, you know, thinking more deeply about permitting, perhaps, as part of what we do. So, you know, last summer what we did, we didn't try to save the whole world with the bill we did last summer. There's a lot of things that make it hard to build housing. One of them is the price of materials. One of them is, you know, labor and labor shortages and those kinds of things. We just wanted to, if there's a list of eight things, I made up the eight, but we just wanted to really check off one of them and one that we think could make a real difference. And it is harder to build in downtowns. And so what we tried to do was make it easier to build in downtowns. And hopefully that will, it didn't change anything what you can or can't do outside, by the way, the issue that has been raised here, but what it really does is try to make it easier, that much easier to build in downtowns and help encourage it. So yes, there will be some work done over the summer.
There's discussions right in Manchester, right, about trying to provide some needed housing, affordable housing, you know, right in the center of town that has some elements of the work to allow for upzoning, if you will, and then yep. connection to water and sewer and the whole... Everything we've talked about today, you know, hopefully will come to play in Manchester with some new housing.
Yeah, we have a lot of work going on, and there's the one site that the town has available. And incidentally, that site really becomes viable because of the bill we passed last year that makes it possible, among other things, to build in what are called flood hazard areas. That's where, and by the way, it's worth noting, that's more the rising water than the rushing water. But as long as you build up high enough, you know, two feet above the high water mark, and a couple of other things, but at least it makes, because most of our towns were built on areas, because they're built on rivers, they tend to often be in those technically what are called flood hazard areas. And if you close off development there, then you can't build where you need to build or where it really makes the most sense to build. And so what we did last year with last year's bill was say that you can build in these areas if you do certain things to floodproof and make sure you're not going to have the housing get flooded. So some progress made last year and then this year and hopefully more next year.
And communities are reaching out already. They see the benefits of the neighborhood designation area, for example, is one of those designated areas that does serve the purpose is to plan for more housing development. And they're reaching out, getting grants to help them plan for that and wanting to accommodate more housing, which is a shift that I've seen in the last few years. We did not have this many communities actively raising their hands and saying, help us plan for more development of housing in our community.
And
so that's good.
It's worth noting one thing we didn't mention in here is that just like there was money last year for planning grants, municipal planning and zoning grants, there's another $500,000 in this year. And one of the real targets of that money is to help towns expand and develop NDAs around their village centers and designated downtowns, which will help expand the area to which this bill adheres.
Exactly.
So that's really important as well. A lot of work to do with the town. The towns have to take a lot of this on themselves as well, but we're helping to put in some tools to help make it happen.
Well, I have a strong feeling we could easily talk about this for another half an hour or longer, but I guess we'll have to leave it there for today. But I'm just thinking, Ann, anytime you want to come down here and like help me co-host one of these discussions, feel free to hop in the car and come on down. Anyway, I want to thank all three of you for making the time today for this conversation. I really appreciate you all being here. Representative Seth Baumgartz, who represents Manchester, Sandgate, Arlington, and part of Sunderland. I should have said that at the beginning, but I forgot. Commissioner of Housing, Josh Hanford, and also Ann Wallace-Allen, a reporter with 7 Days. And thanks to all of you who've been with us today. Hope you found our program interesting, and thank you for sharing part of your day with us. And we'll see you again the next time. Take care.
Thank you for listening local. For more local content, visit gnat.tv.